Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Gary Null. I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk about health and nutrition and healing. And all the questions that you have involving these issues or any of the other topics that you hear regularly, please feel free to call. No guest, no commentaries, no original investigative reporting. That'll all be tomorrow. In fact, you won't want to miss tomorrow. I'll be beginning a two-part series on the Progressive Radio Hour tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, one full hour devoted to the truth about the safety of vaccines. This will be posted because I think it's highly relevant when, once again, we are encouraged to take vaccines that we know the truth. Are they safe? Now, I've already done a program on are they effective. I've also done one on Gardasil. This is the third in the series, and there'll be two more. But on the Noom program, I'll be dealing with the flu vaccine, a special investigative report. I'll also be offering a response to the 60 Minutes piece on Steve Jobs and his cancer therapies. And what they left out of the story is really substantial. And you'll see why the position they took is simply not objective or fair. For example, how many people die of cancer each year? Almost 500,000. How many of those people just use orthodox therapy and do exactly as their oncologists suggest? Almost all of them. And what about the people who did exactly as they were told, including with pancreatic cancer, have their surgeries and radiation and chemotherapy and still die? The vast majority. Why didn't they mention this? So I will. I'll go into depth about pancreatic cancer and the fact that what I would have done had I spoken with Steve Jobs. I sent word out to him but never heard from him. In any case, they're not even looking at the carcinogenesis of the drugs that he took throughout his lifetime and what happens when you are stressed and the role of cortisol in depressing the immune system. But on our show today, so that's just some of what I'm dealing with. On our show today, I want to give you some really healing information. There's some little molecules in your body and they get into your body when you eat the right food that have a lot of physiological factors they work on. So write this down. It's called Fucidans, Fucoidans, or Fucidans. So anyhow, I'm going to talk about those. Then, for those of you who've asked, what will help my muscular system stay strong as I age, especially after the age of 40, as many of you find that you are losing a lot of your muscle strength and fat and saggy skin is taking its place. Well, I'll talk about the branched amino acids. Dr. Matilde Parente wrote some interesting stuff I'll share with you, and also what's good for high blood pressure, a more in-depth analysis from Kirk Stokel and my own comments on that. But let's begin with the latest on health and healing. Because this is very empowering stuff. This is material we can use absolutely today. I believe that we should have a diet that has at least minimum of 11 servings of flavonoids each day. Because we know that the flavonoids help repair DNA In fact, the reds, like your berries, pomegranate, grapes, cherries, mango, papaya, blood oranges, those are reddish, and those flavonoids in there are extremely important in helping to take DNA that has suffered some form of maybe trauma, viral, bacterial, parasitic, genetic, a defect, and help repair it. Here's one more reason why you should have flavonoid-rich foods. This is according to the Academy of Neurology from a Dr. Go, MD, PhD. They evaluated 49,000 men enrolled in the health professional follow-up study and 80,000 women who were in the nurses' health study. So that's almost 130,000 people. What they found was this. The men who had the highest intake of flavonoids were among the top 20% of participants who had 40% lower risk of developing Parkinson's disease compared to the men whose intake was lower. And this is very important. Here's what it says, quote, "Our findings suggest that flavonoids, specifically a group called anthocyanins, may have neuroprotective effect." Well, it's more than may have. It does have. Because I worked, it was almost 3 years ago when we began a specific health support group. We have one this Wednesday, but we're filled, just reminding people to be there. The one 3 years ago was specific. It was about healing the brain naturally. It was a clinical study, and we had a lot of people in it. But to get in it, you had to have multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, and or dementia. And what we found was two of the people in that group, one with Parkinson, made enormous improvement. Multiple sclerosis completely reversed. And Alzheimer's, about 95% reversed. And they're around today to tell their story. In fact, if you go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNull.com, you can see their testimony. Unrehearsed, uncoached, just telling you what their symptoms were then, how they're doing now. So one of the things we encouraged at that time was very, very high concentrations of flavonoids. Now, you can't eat enough in just fruits or vegetables. There would just be too much bulk in the diet. And there, if it's fruits, it'd be too much sugar, or in some cases, too much acidity. So instead, we had them either do concentrates or powders to get more of it in there. Because when you eliminate the fiber and you eliminate the water, then you're really left with what the healing flavonoids are and phytonutrients. And I believe that that was a major, major impact. So more of the flavonoids. For example, apples. Organic apples, and the skin in particular, grapes, and grape concentrate, those are good also. Pomegranates, terrific for you. If you can't get the fresh pomegranate, then get the pomegranate juice or concentrate. If you can't get that, then get the pomegranate powder, which you can buy in many health food stores. We don't get enough fiber. Just look at the average American. Too many refined carbohydrates, and they take most of the fiber out of those refined carbohydrates. This is according to the Archives of Internal Medicine. They found that the more fiber you take in, the lower your risk of death over a 9-year period. They studied 219,000 men and 168,000 women in the National Institutes of Health AARP Diet and Health Study. And over a 9-year average, the people had the highest percentage of fiber. That's about 29.4 grams. I would suggest 50. But they had 22% less risk of dying from anything. And that's very important. Because just look what happens when you eat something. Let's say that you get up in the morning and you have bacon and eggs or sausage and eggs, which a lot of people have, in toast and coffee. That's normally what they have. First, the coffee is going to cause highly acidic reaction within your stomach. That in turn means that if you take your calcium pills, as many women do at that time, or some multiple vitamin, because the caffeine is also a diuretic, it can cause the calcium, zinc, potassium, and other nutrients be swept right through the body. So you're not benefiting. You're getting very low absorption. But then you also end up putting high levels of fat, growth-stimulating hormones, pesticides, all of which are in your pork and in the eggs. And then you have a refined carbohydrate. Now, all of this was cooked, including the toast, so that you have at least three known and proven carcinogenic agents you're taking into your system, mainly amines, acrylamides, and heterocyclic amines. Then, when you get this into the stomach, it doesn't digest easily. So more often than not, there will be a dumping, meaning instead of being the consistency of soup, which is the ideal consistency for food to be digested, that's why chewing thoroughly is so important, and not drinking with a meal is important because it dilutes your digestive acids and the enzymes, and it can change the pH. So what happens is when you chew your food thoroughly, you don't have a beverage with the meal. You can have it before or an hour after, but not with. Then the food gets broken down. It's called hydrolysis. With the heat of the stomach and the acid and some pepsinogen and some proteolytic enzymes, the protein is broken down. Then it goes through a little flap in the bottom of the stomach called the pyloric sphincter muscle into the duodenum where it's deacidified, and then into the intestine. And then there's one part of the intestine called the duodenum, and that's where most of your absorption of your nutrients occur. And then the body tries to take out a lot of the water in there, and but not too much, and it passes in clear through the ascending, transverse and descending colon, and then finally into the rectum, out of the body. That's the way it should be. Now, when you have caffeine, you disrupt the normal good bacteria in your intestines. When you have food that has very little or no fiber, meat has no fiber, dairy and cheese has no fiber, eggs have no fiber, then the normal peristalsis, which is the wave-like rhythmic movement, just visualize a snake scooting across the grass, that's kind of like how your intestine moves. Tiny little electrical charges cause the muscles to contract, constrict and relax, so it forces food through and except when you have a lot of fat. Now here's the problem. When you have a lot of fat, then the gallbladder gets a message, lots of fat on the way, slow down digestion. So then bile, which is secreted by the gallbladder to go into the intestine to break down fat, that's a very slow process. Now you've got food going through there very slowly. But all those carcinogenic agents, they're up against the very smooth, delicate mucous membranes of your intestine. That is where cancer occurs. But it doesn't just cause cancer. Initially, before cancer, you have inflammation. And the inflammation is every time you have a soft drink, artificial sweetener, sugar. Whenever you have an animal protein, you're increasing inflammation in the intestine. Now, the less fiber you have, the longer that pro-inflammatory food stays in the intestine. It's just not moving. And then if you have coffee and a lot of meat and dairy, then you end up with constipation. Now, if you're stressed and you have depression, you have real serious problems because that adversely affects the digestion. Because here's why. Any time that you're really stressed, the cortisol in your body goes real high. And right behind the cortisol goes insulin and then your blood sugar and then adrenaline. Now, that's your flight and fight response because you want to get as much energy into the cells so your cells can move and do whatever you want them to do, flee or fight. Generally, it takes about a minute to a minute and a half for this whole biological process to peak and then subside. However, what if you stay chronically depressed or chronically angry or chronically bitter or chronically jealous or chronically, let's say, just mean-spirited? Well, that means then that the body is now out of its normal digestive cycle, because digestion, for all intents and purposes, comes to a screeching halt the moment you're stressed, because the body now has got a priority. Fleeing danger or fighting is more important than digestion. Digestion requires a very tranquil and peaceful medium. So your body will stop digestion. I mean, stop it completely when you get stressed. Now, we adapt to stress, but our digestion doesn't. Our colon doesn't, our intestines don't. So as a result, a lot of Americans walk around not having 2 to 3 eliminations a day, which is healthy. The general rule is you should eliminate old debris as new food and nourishment enters the body. Well, a lot of people don't do that, and those are the people who are setting themselves up for polyps, inflammation, diverticulitis, all forms of itises, ileitis, in the intestine, and that in turn can lead to colorectal cancer. Now imagine fiber. Fiber is like a broom cleaning up a mess. And the better the fiber, if you have a combination like fruit fibers, blueberries, apples, apples terrific. Apple skins are quite simply one of nature's most perfect fibers for intestinal cleansing. But so are blueberries and raspberries and grapes. All of them are terrific. Then throw in some of the walnuts and almonds, and then some grains and beans, and you have a full spectrum of different fibers, all working on a different level. And that's why we need good quality fiber. Now, one new study from the Cochrane database of systematic reviews, and this was what's known as a meta-analysis. Meta means many. An analysis means they looked at many different studies to see on one topic, to see did something really work. In this case, it was 13 separate studies where people use zinc as a treatment for colds in 1,000 individuals, approximately 1,000. And here's what they found. And it says the following from a Dr. Minyu Singh and colleagues who did the review. They found that zinc preparations, including lozenges and cough syrups using zinc, initiated within 1 day of symptoms onset, decreased the severity and length of the common cold. As a preventative, 5 months of using zinc on a daily basis in children resulted in 36% fewer colds and less time lost in school compared to those who did not use zinc. And it looked at all types of zinc, zinc gluconate, zinc lozenges, zinc sulfate, but I think the best type of zinc is the zinc amino acid. In any case, one more reason to use zinc, and I would suggest 15 to 20 milligrams a day. One of the superstar vegetables that everyone's pretty familiar with now is broccoli. A recent report from the American Cancer Society's Journal of Medical Chemistry brings to light the discovery of a potential biochemical basis for broccoli's ability to fight cancer. For the first time, scientists uncovered that certain substances in broccoli target and block one of the defective genes associated with cancer. These are called isothiocyanates, found in broccoli. Now, I've been suggesting people use isothiocyanates separately as well as in broccoli, but also cauliflower, watercress, and other cruciferous vegetables. And that appears to stop the growth of cancer. And for many years, scientists weren't sure how this substance worked. But Dr. Chung and colleagues showed in experiments that the tumor suppressor gene P53 appears to play a key role in keeping cells healthy and preventing them from mutating into cancer cells. So the bottom line is, eat your cruciferous vegetables, you could be preventing cancer. And now they know why. In these different cancer foods, anti-cancer foods, like watercress, cauliflower, and broccoli, and others, you have a chemical, and this chemical helps in the blocking of cancers. It impacts gene 53, and it's called isothiocyanates. Well, that's good news. more vitamin D, the lower risk of serious disease of all types. This was done by Dr. Cedric Garland, University of California, San Diego Medical School. And what they found out there was that significant higher amounts of vitamin D than what are currently recommended are needed to raise levels to those that help prevent breast cancer and other diseases. The findings are in the journal Anti-Cancer Research. What they did, they analyzed 3,600 men and women who were average age 50. And they found that they needed more vitamin D of what they were taking. Quote, "We found that daily intakes of vitamin D by adults in the range of 4,000 to 8,000, that's 4,000 to 8,000 units, are needed to maintain blood levels of vitamin D metabolites in the range needed to reduce by about half the risk of several diseases, breast cancer, colon cancer, multiple sclerosis, and type 1 diabetes. And that was in Anti-Cancer Research. That's good news. More Americans are using supplements. This is according to the Journal of Nutrition. Researchers at the National Institutes of Health Office Dietary Supplements and the National Center for Health Statistics centers obtained the data from individuals, and they're saying that approximately 53% of women are using supplements and 44% of men are using supplements. That's a substantial increase over the past. But you see, most people are just using a low-potency multiple vitamin. They're not using the superstars that can make a difference. That's a very small percentage. And also, if you have a vitamin D deficiency, that could be impairing your lungs. According to the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, vitamin D deficiencies, when you don't have enough, can adversely affect your lungs. Some exciting research from the American Journal of Pathology. They're showing that free radicals, now that's what you get when you drink alcohol in any amount, when people smoke, when people, let's say, around pollution or stressed or eating a bad diet, you increase free radicals, and that can end up causing common eye diseases. Quote, "Our discovery is significant because it gives us the first hope for slowing the progression of disease." And they said it was the free radicals. Well, hello. How about just taking your eye vitamins, like vitamin C and quercetin, xanthin, and lutein and lycopene? Those are all good. And to settle this argument, well, if you have good genes, you're going to be healthier than someone who doesn't, or if you have bad genes, you're going to die sooner. This is all nonsense. An article published in the Journal of Internal Medicine shows that our actions are more important in dictating how long we will live than inherited factors. Researchers at the University of Gothenburg evaluated data from the 1913 men epidemiological study, and then they did it over the years. And what they found was the healthier choices, the longer you're going to live. And the non-smokers, the people who did not consume the bad diet, people who kept their cholesterol in range, people who exercised, they're the ones who lived the longest, not the people who had the genes. Now, I mentioned earlier that in our study, we were able to help people by giving them a very outstanding diet, but lots of flavonoids. A new study in neurology, the peer-reviewed journal, shows that vitamin D helps protect people who are susceptible to multiple sclerosis. So one more reason to use that. And another good reason to use vitamin D, according to anti-cancer research, is that vitamin D lowers the risk of serious diseases of all type. So, good news all around. Keep taking your magnesium. It can reduce the risk of diabetes, according to a new study that was published in Diabetes and Obstetrics. Diabetes and Obesity Metabolism. And finally, green tea can help prevent Alzheimer's disease. This is good news. A research team from Newcastle University in the United Kingdom recently concluded that consuming green tea on a regular basis may provide protection against Alzheimer's and other dementias. Quote, There are certain chemicals we know to be beneficial, and we can identify foods which are rich in them. But what happens during the digestive process is crucial whether these foods are actually doing us any good. In the case of green tea, the beneficial compounds are polyphenols, which when ingested are broken down to produce a concoction of compounds. And these are the compounds that researchers tested. Quote, what we're really excited about in this study was that we found when green tea is digested by enzymes in the gut, the resulting chemicals are actually more effective against key triggers of Alzheimer's disease in the undigested form of the tea. Okay. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we take green tea in capsule form, and that way we get maximum absorption. And if you want to make sure you're really getting good absorption, take it with some papaya juice. That's one of the best ways. And finally, vitamin D insufficiently linked with autoimmune lung disease. The peer-reviewed journal Chest reports findings of researchers at the University of Cincinnati of an increased incidence of vitamin D insufficiency or deficiency in patients with connective tissue disease. So you want to protect your lungs? Once again, vitamin D. I'm Gary Noll. Now we're going to open up our lines for you. So we're going to be taking calls now. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Happy to hear from you. So give us a call right now. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. Does she need me? Has she pretend? Is this a game? Well, then will I win? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. I'd like to know when she's not with me, if she's still true to me. I'd like to know when we're kissing, does she feel just what I feel? And how am I to know if it's really real? Oh, tell me where this lies. Is it her kiss or in her eyes? Well, it's a love question I'd like to know.
And we're going to be taking your calls now. And let's say hello to Vincent from New Jersey. Hi, Vincent.
Hi, Gary. Good evening. I'm getting an awful lot of feedback. Are you okay with my talking like this?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you on a regular telephone?
No, I'm on a regular landline phone.
Okay, I'll ask our engineer to check to see why we might be getting this loop back.
Okay.
Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Yeah, I'm hearing myself strongly. Anyway, I would like to recommend some nutrients for my wife, who has developed an inflammatory disease of the skin that's called lichen planus, that affects the tongue, body, and even genitals. I know certainly a number of anti-inflammatory nutrients, but perhaps you could list a few of the best with great dosages to start off with.
Sure, I'm happy to help you. Why don't you hang up and just listen over the internet, because you won't get the echoing sound. Inflammation can come from a lot of different sources. Radiation is bad because it sets up chronic inflammation. But then again, viruses cause inflammation. Bacteria can cause inflammation. Parasites cause inflammation. And injury can cause inflammation, but so can allergies, anemia, arthritis, asthma, autoimmune disease, Crohn's disease, ulcers. All of these are based upon inflammation. So the first thing we should do is look at our diet to see, is there anything in this diet that could be contributing to it? For example, are you allergic to wheat? And if so, then are you gluten-free? Are you allergic to dairy? Are you dairy-free? Have you eliminated all artificial sweeteners, all processed sugars, and all caffeinated beverages? All fried foods, deep-fried foods. So let's get the obvious out of the way. Now, then we want to turn off the inflammation. Generally, 50 milligrams, the B-complex, three times a day for 1 month, is a good way because the B-complex is absolutely essential for tissue repair. But especially inflammation in the brain, I would use B12, and I would use 1 to 2,000 micrograms, that's 1 to 2 milligrams, and methylating B12. For vitamin C, if someone has a really bad inflammation, I'm going to recommend intravenous vitamin C, starting at 50,000 milligrams and going up, depending upon what the inflammation is. Now, cancer is inflammation, and I've seen some of the best results when vitamin C was intravenous, along with other nutrients, at up to 200,000 milligrams, along with aqueous vitamin A. But orally, for the mouth, generally you start at 2,000 milligrams, and then each week add 1,000 milligrams in buffered form. Because vitamin C is one of your single most important nutrients for turning off inflammation and actually healing. Then we want to go towards the essential fatty acids. Evening primrose oil, flaxseed oil, fish oils, borage seed oil, are all, and black currant oil. All of those reduce inflammation. Grapeseed extract at 100 to 200 milligrams. And then proteolytic enzymes. That also increases healing. The mineral I mentioned earlier, but a little higher dose, 50 milligrams. And one of the superstars of anti-inflammation is bromelain. Brome, B-R-O-M-E, lane, L-A-I-N-E. Bromelain is an anti-inflammatory. It increases the breakdown of fibrin, which forms around the inflamed area, blocking the blood and lymphatic vessels. Garlic is about 5,000 milligrams a day is very good. Vitamin A generally at about 5,000 units. But also beta-1,3-D-glucan, G-L-U-C-A-N. It boosts your immune system and fights inflammation. I would use vitamin E at about 400 units because it's an antioxidant which reduces inflammation. And then aloe vera juice every 3 hours at 2 ounces. Bilberry is good in a juice. And then the herbs together, boswellia, B-O-S-W-E-L-L-I-A, and turmeric. But in the form of curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, I would suggest about 200 milligrams of boswellia, but 2,000 milligrams of curcumin. They reduce inflammation in your joints, in your eyes, in your brain. Cat's claw is also good at inflammation, but so is cayenne, devil's claw, echinacea, ginger, paudarco, P-A-U-D-A-R-C-O, red clover, stinging nettle, white willow bark, which is the natural form of aspirin, and yucca, Y-U-C-C-A. And then horsetail is good also. It's a source of silica, and that helps bones. And then olive leaf extract eases inflammation, especially if it's bacterial in nature. You've got to eat about 75% of your diet raw, and drinking herbal teas about 4 per day, but drinking juices about 8 per day. And once again, go back to what I mentioned earlier in the program, the flavonoids. They're very powerful antioxidants, and they reduce inflammation. For example, you might want to make your wife a pineapple papaya juice. Now, if you use the core of the pineapple, that pithy area that's rather chewy, that's the bromelain. And then papaya contains papain, P-A-P-A-I-N, both enzymes that reduce swelling and inflammation. And I've seen swelling and inflammation reduced in people in as little as a week when they're doing it correct. Again, it should be fresh and organic. Coconut oil, very good for you. And so that's what I would suggest. All the best to you, and hope that you know, your wife gets well soon. And let's see who else we hear here. Just looking for, I'm not in the city, so I'm going to ask my engineer if we have someone standing by. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. Your turn. Let's see who's up on the air. I believe we have Egan from New Jersey. Hi, Egan.
Gary, I would like to ask you, are there any natural ways of treating MRSA? And is black tea equal to green tea?
Okay, I'm going to ask my engineer to correct the feedback. There's a feedback audio loop. That's what's causing this. The answer is yes. The very best therapy for MRSA is to do hyperbaric oxygen, because most MRSA comes from some external scratch or cut, but almost always in a hospital you pick it up by surfaces. So anytime you go into a hospital to visit, or if you're in a hospital, you really, really must clean the room down yourself. That means you have to take a mixture of 50-50 hydrogen peroxide and alcohol, rubbing alcohol, isopropyl alcohol, and you really soak paper towels, and you vigorously wipe down all surface areas in a hospital, doorknobs, railings, faucets, toilet seats, toilet bowls, walls, anything that you're going to touch, lean against, sit on, lay on, you have to assume that it is infected. The fact that 100,000 Americans die from contact in a hospital with infective agents, now, that can prevent that because people are extremely careless. In fact, recently I was at the farmer's market and I was filming a very famous chef. And this guy is a terrific chef, but he's not big on hygiene, because I'm watching him take strawberries right out of a basket and pop them in his mouth. In fact, he was eating some lettuces and sampling stuff. And I mentioned to him, I said, you're aware that if this is organic, it's grown where there's manure. And the manure is in the soil, and it enriches the soil. It gives it better nitrogen and more minerals. But all vegetables are either naturally irrigated or they're irrigated when the system comes on and mists it or sprinkles it. But also, when water hits the soil, it bounces back up. It ricochets back up underneath the leaves of your vegetables, lettuces or what, green beans, tomatoes, doesn't matter what it is. So that means you have E. coli. You have at least 100 different types of bacteria and viruses that are naturally on there. So, and then you have someone who's coming along and harvesting it, then someone else that generally is sorting it and bagging it, and none of this stuff is washed. You're not going to have people washing strawberries. They'll turn to mush. They'll get moldy. And they're not washing the sprouts either, because the sprouts would just be limp and all sticking together. So just imagine now how many different sources of bacteria. The difference is you're not a dog. A dog can take a piece of bone with meat on it that's clearly would kill you if you ate it, chew on it for a while, dig a hole, bury it, come back a week later, dig up the bone, and chew it on it. Why doesn't the dog die? Well, first, because the dog has antibodies that he's made from that. Secondly, the dog has a very acidic system. Just like a lion or a tiger, they're very, very acidic, and that acid is meant to kill parasites or any bacteria that gets into them. Otherwise, they'd all die very early, because virtually all the water, wherever they're at in Africa or any place else, is toxic. But they don't die because they have adapted. We have not. By the way, to give you an idea of this, when you take a lion in Africa, the average lifespan of a lion is about 10 years. Lionesses can live 12, sometimes even 14, because they hunt together and they tend to share together. Lions, when they can no longer maintain their dominance of a pride, they're thrown out and they quickly die because they can't catch anything for themselves. So they go hungry. because rarely does the lion actually do the hunt. It's the lionesses do 99% of the hunting. Now, you put that same lion in a zoo, and they'll live 25 years. Same way with a lioness, they'll live much longer. In fact, I still believe that Cheetah from the Tarzan films is still alive. I know that Kokomo Jr., the chimp I helped raise and taught language, and she could respond to over 162 different words, she's still alive. And I met her through her owner when I first came to New York. I don't know if you remember the Dave Garraway show on NBC, the morning show, but the chimp was on there was Kokomo Jr. And the owner was at 90th and Broadway. And when I would go out to run, he one day yelled from his window. He's on the first floor. He says, hey, he says, I'm smoke, I drank, I'm out of shape. I see you running each day here. He says, can you teach me how to run, get into shape? I said, sure. So he came down to the park, Riverside Park, and I got him into shape. I didn't know what he did. He didn't say it. It was none of my business. And then one day he says, come on over here. I think I got something you'd find interesting. So I went in, and here was this chimpanzee. And he said, well, this is Kokomo Jr. And then he showed me all these other chimps that when they get too big, he had this place in North Carolina where they went to retire. And he would travel a lot, and he would say, when I'm going, would you take care of the chimp? I said, sure, because I lived a half block away. And then that's when I started working with the chimp, and he had this retainer on her back that would give her a shock if she acted out. Well, I took it off her, but I wanted to see what would happen. And instead, I gave her rewards. If she did something, I would talk her very gently, and but then I would give her hugs, and I'd give her all kinds of treats, fruits, and most importantly, at night, instead of putting her in this room and locking all up, I let her come out and stay on the couch where I'd be, and she would just lay there, and she was so adorable. She'd just lay there, and she'd look at me, and she'd be, you know, playing with my chin and my face, and then she'd fall asleep. And then I'd pick her up and I'd take her in, and I got her a big teddy bear and got her a blanket, and that was her security blanket. And totally changed her personality. Love can just change so many qualities in a human or an animal. In any case, I worked with her, and I finally ended up, after years, writing a book called From Instinct to Intellect, The Study of Primates, where I hypothesize in the book that these wonderful creatures are far smarter than what we give them credit for being. They have a capacity to understand this and understand our emotions, and they respond to those emotions, but we don't pay attention to their emotions. And if we did, we could better communicate. And in any case, that was my first experience, and that was one of the reasons I would later, for my entire adult life, I would have a farm or a ranch where I could have raise them from babies. Because when you raise a monkey from a baby, and I get orphans, because frequently a pride will reject a baby. Now, you don't know why, but they'll reject it. And then the baby feels so lonely and gets so depressed it starts biting its tail, and will literally bite its tail off. And then it gets infected, then it dies. So around the United States, when there is a baby that's rejected by her mother or his mother, I'll get a call. Can you use another, you know? And I say, okay, we'll send it over. And the first thing I do is 24 hours a day, I just keep that little, and they're so small, they fit in the palm of your hand. They're no bigger than a tennis ball. And they suck their thumb and look at you and sleep a lot. You got to change your diaper, and you got to feed them, and then you got to give them a little bath each day. But I put them in a pocket on my chest, so they're right on my heart chakra, so they're getting that very strong love heart energy out. And then at nighttime, they do something that's absolutely remarkable. When they get a little older, about 6 months, and they're still tiny, at nighttime when they're sleeping, and they like to sleep with a security blanket and a teddy bear, they drag that little thing everywhere. They come up and they put their hands on both sides of your face, and then they lay their head on your neck, and they go to sleep. And they clench like they do in nature, where they hold on their mom's hair. They just hold onto your skin all night long, and it's just adorable. And that way, you get to see their personality develop, and each one's different. Each one has a completely different personality. When I got one 2 years ago, because a guy had a stroke in Texas, this older man, and he couldn't take care of her anymore. So he had heard that I take care of animals. I take in injured animals, diseased animals, get them back to health, and then find them a home, or if it's a wild animal, let them go back into nature. So anyhow, when it arrived, it was so nervous, it wouldn't come out of its little traveling case. So I would put food there and water, and all day, not a thing. And I'm sitting there doing my work. And about 6 o'clock at night, I see this little finger coming out, just a little tiny finger, and it touches my finger and pulls itself back. Okay, it was making contact. And they like to touch fingers. So I just left my hand there. And sure enough, about 10 minutes later, the finger came out, touched again, pulled back. And then finally, it touched and didn't pull back. And then its whole hand came out and touched my finger, a little tiny thing. And then I could hear a little chirping. And that's their first sounds. And a little tiny, like a little tiny bird chirp. And then they come out, and then I gave her a bottle. And I create my own special formulas for them. And then starts the bonding. And then they grow with you, so they know all about you. And every morning, even though they don't have to have a bottle after they're weaned at about a year, I continue to give them a bottle every day because it creates that bonding where they curl up in your arms and you give them the bottle, and then they just look at you. And it's just wonderful. That's just with primates, but of course I know that many of you have dogs and cats or birds, and you also know that connection's very special. Anyhow, let's go back over there and continue with our phone calls. Let's see if the audio is better. Can you hear me now? Speak up, please.
Am I next?
Oh. Yeah, you're next.
Is there an echo?
Yeah, just go. What we'll do, we'll just have you make your calls and then hang up and listen over the phone.
Okay, right, I'll try to be clear. Since you were talking about digestion earlier, I've been wanting to ask this. I had my gallbladder out last January, and I had no warning. I just had pain one day and went to the emergency room. I was 40, and I had been vegan also for 20 years. But you said that when the gallbladder's action slows down the digestion, that actually contributes to the possibility of colon cancer. I wanted to ask that because I was told that I have an increased chance of colon cancer since I've had it out, and I wanted to ask you if there's anything you think I should do differently since I have had it out. And I also wanted to ask something for people who haven't had theirs out, because I had heard about the cleanses even before this happened to me, but I had never tried it, where you take Epsom salts and then successively oil, and it supposedly opens the duct and actually flushes out the gallstones. But then there are self-proclaimed quackbusters who say that that's impossible. There's no way you could do that. I was wondering how you feel about that. I guess I'll hang up.
Okay, please hang up, and I'll be happy to address your issues. First and foremost, understand who the quackbusters are. These are people who have no background in public health, nutrition, dietetics, and are not practicing, most of them are not practicing medicine. Secondly, they align themselves with the pharmaceutical industry and the AMA. No matter what it is they're talking about, no matter who's doing any work in the field, virtually every physician and every person within the health field is attacked by them. So I could certainly understand and would even encourage if there was a legitimate open dialogue or debate on an issue. In their case, there's no openness. They wanted to ban all alternative therapy. They hate chiropractic. In fact, one of them, a man named Jarvis, got his doctorate, University of Oregon, by doing a dissertation attacking chiropractic. and as if it were an unscientific cult, and then they promote the idea that it's an unscientific cult. Interesting, because yesterday I was filming in Titusville, Florida. I filmed the day before. I'm on a 63-day road trip now, and that's why there could be some technical problems, because I use a little portable broadcaster, and I'm driving about 10 hours a day and filming, and I'll be doing that until I finish two particular important films that I'm working on, and I'm going to get them done now so I can get them out in the spring. But there's no way to really get the truth unless you spend, for example, spending a day with a senior citizen who's in good health, but whose income is too low to pay for medication, food, fuel, and either mortgage or rent. And there's zero support system there. There's one child who himself is out of work, and this is just yesterday, for example. And so how in the world does this person survive? What do they do during a day? And now I'm starting at the north in Montana and working across Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, etc. And you forget what happens when wintertime comes there. And you better be supplied. You better have your food, because it might be a real rough time getting out. And then if you're a senior citizen, you have a whole other series of problems to come in with. No one is talking about any of this in the media. It's absolutely not discussed at all. What happens if you are the average senior citizen and you simply don't have enough money to make ends meet? So I'm finding out firsthand. I'm spending time with people to find out, what do they do? How are they surviving? What does their future look like? In any case, all that aside, one of the people I filmed, in fact, one of the people who you'll see this week, I'll put it up on YouTube. I'm FedExing the packages back, my film, every day, so it can be uploaded and then edited, is a man named Lance Armstrong, not the cyclist. This is a chiropractor. And Lance Armstrong was a captain in the Air Force in 1996, and there was an accident that he was in and hurt his neck, as did everyone else in this plane. And his physicians told him just to take a bunch of pills, painkillers. And after about 3 months, he wasn't getting any better, and he said that he had heard that there was a chiropractor he should see, and he said that the man showed him his desk, and he said, "If everything that we know about medicine and healing is the top of this desk, this one tiny quarter of an inch is chiropractic. You don't want to use it. It doesn't work. It's quackery. It could kill you. There's no science behind it." And so initially he believed that, but then his pain got so bad, so he simply decided, what the heck, quietly, he went ahead and got this chiropractic help. Not only did it completely cured him after 3 weeks of treatment, and when he went back, he saw that his commander was not going to be interested in knowing what he did. He just said, "Well, I took all the pills, and the pills helped me." He then left the services and went to chiropractic school and became a chiropractor. And then he went back into the services, and so he's now responsible for getting chiropractic treatment in about, I think he said, 50 different military bases as part of their healthcare provision around the United States. It was also interesting because he said in chiropractic college, they talk about the articles that I wrote that actually saved chiropractic, because it was those articles and the documents that were taken out of AMA headquarters and their secret department of investigations that no one knew existed, that was given to the quackbusters and other people that continued to give this campaign that chiropractic was an unscientific cult, and if you're a medical doctor, you could not receive patients from or recommend patients to a chiropractor. So in any case, that was all nonsense. Chiropractic is a legitimate very important healing science, irrespective of the the quackbusters. And now the quackbusters are losing, just so you know, in every court case in the United States. They're losing. They're being shown not to be scientific, not to be experts. They're being fined hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, once again, listen to where your mind went. Oh, a quackbuster. And you assume that the quackbuster starts with being right. And I'm telling you the quackbusters are universally wrong. But back to the idea of gallbladder disorders. Look at alfalfa, the essential fatty acids, garlic, lecithin granules, L-glycine, which is essential for the biosynthesis of nucleate and bile acids, and taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, is very important because it's necessary for the formation of an important bile acid and helps prevent the formation of gallstones. B-complex and B12 and choline and inositol, vitamin C, and in fact a deficiency of vitamin C can actually lead to gallstones, and vitamin D3, because the gallbladder, if it malfunctions, it interferes with vitamin D absorption. That's why if you don't have your gallbladder, you got to make sure that you're getting your 4,000 to 7,000 units of vitamin D3. And also vitamin E prevents fats from becoming rancid, and that's important also. And then just make sure that your diet consists of high levels of raw. Apple juice is one of the single best things you can take, as well as pear juice and beet juice. Those are all liver cleansers, and avoid your sugars. And detoxifying the liver and colon is important for improving gallbladder function, and even colonics are very good. If you're overweight, you're more susceptible to gallbladder disease. And females ages 40 and over who are overweight and have had children are more likely than most people to suffer from gallbladder disorders. So lots of juices, but one tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and a glass of apple juice, that can help relieve a lot of pain. And so that's what I would suggest. All the best to you. I'm looking at the clock and we're out of time. So I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. And I'm on the road and I'll be out here for some time trying to show another side of American life that's getting no attention but deserves it, so we can help these people and help ourselves as well. Let's say hello to Michael Rupert, who I believe is standing by. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hiya, Gary. I'm hearing a little echo, too. Gary, can you hear me?
I can, Michael, yes. I can hear you, Michael.
Okay, now I'm kind of losing you. Board said we had a little trouble with the difficulties. We're going to have a quiet show tonight. We got a lot of input from listeners. And I'm going to do an update. I've been asked to do a video for the Occupy Wall Street movement, talking to all police officers in the world about something about honor and about what Sergeant Shamar Thomas was talking about in New York last week. I'm going to talk about the making of that video, and we're going to catch up on world events tonight.
Sounds good. We look forward to it. So thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone.